Following is a class given by His Holiness Jaya Padaka Swami on January 22, 1995 in Bangalore, Karnataka, India. The class was given with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 1, Text 12.
Mukakuro divacha lang pangur langayate giringat kipa tamahang bande si gurung dinatarinam paramanandamadavam si chaitanishwaram. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 12. Sutta janasi badrangte bhagavan Satvatam Pati Devakya Vasudevasya Jato Yasya Chikishaya Sutta Janasi Bhadrangte Bhagavan Satvatam Pati Devakyam Vasudevasya Jato Yasya Chikishaya Sutta Janasi Bhadrante Bhagavan Satvatam Pati Devakyam Vasudevasya Jato yasya chikishaya.
Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Avaicharan Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. All blessings upon you, O Suta Goswami. You know for what purpose the personality of Godhead appeared in the womb of Devaki as the son of Vasudeva. Purport. Bhagavan means the Almighty God, who is the controller of all opulence, power, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. He is the protector of His pure devotees. Although God is equally disposed to everyone, He is especially inclined to His devotees. Sat means the absolute truth. And persons who are servitors of the absolute truth are called Satvatas. And the personality of Godhead who protects such pure devotees is known as the protector of the Satvatas. Badrang Te, or blessings upon you, indicate the sage's anxiety to know the absolute truth from the speaker. Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appeared to Devaki, the wife of Vasudeva. Vasudeva is the symbol of the transcendental position wherein the appearance of the Supreme Lord takes place. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation of Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text 12. Om Tat Sat. Today we're speaking at C.C. Krishna Balaram Temple, Bangalore, on the 22nd of January 1995, Kristabdo 508 Gorabdo. So we're beginning the study of the Srimad Bhagavatam from the first canto, first chapter. This is very important. to study the Srimad Bhagavatam from the beginning to the end. So when one has a darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we should first look to his lotus feet. Then gradually allow, just like here we have Balaji, we look to his lotus feet, gradually the eyes rise up to the knees, to the waist, to the chest, to the neck, to his lotus smiling, and to his eyes, and then again back to the lotus feet. This is the system. We don't directly look to the face. We first look humbly to the lotus feet. So in the same way, the first and second canto of Bhagavatam are compared to the lotus feet. As you go up, third and fourth canto are to the knees. Like that, fifth and sixth the waist, sixth and seventh, seven and eight the chest, nine the neck, and then by the time you get up to the tenth canto, you're looking at the lotus feet, face. So, in this way, there are 12 cantos to the Srimad Bhagavatam, and one should systematically read 1 through 12, one after the another. Generally, people go ahead right to the 10th canto to hear about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis and the Rasa Leela. But if you don't study the first 10 cantos, then it's sometimes difficult to understand Krishna's position. And sometimes people mistake what the pastimes in Vrindavan are about. Here the sages are saying to Suta Goswami that you know the mystery why Bhagavan has come as a son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Bhagavan is unborn, Oja. He is possessing all opulences, fame, as mentioned here in the purport, all the opulences, opulence, power, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. This is the meaning of Bhagavan, who has these six things in total. Total opulence, total power, total fame, total beauty, total knowledge, and total renunciation. The Lord creates the whole material world, but he doesn't stay here. He only occasionally makes a visit to fulfill the desires of his devotees. Otherwise, he's not coming and making his presence visible here in the material world on most of the time. So he is very detached, most renounced. Right? If we create something, then we're all attached. What will happen? Just like someone creates a family with children, and then grandchildren. And although the Vedas say at end of life we should prepare ourselves to leave the body and become detached, take vanaprast with our wife, and visit holy places, even at the ripe old age some people might take sannyas. But people are generally hesitant, or they're, you can say, distracted from these spiritual activities because they're very much attached to what they have created, even though they have to leave it sooner or later. So it's natural to be attached. But we gradually have to become more attached to Krishna. Then we'll be drawn back to Krishna. So the Lord Krishna himself, he's detached. So he has all the renunciation. This is a mystery, how the Supreme Lord is taking birth. This is a very big mystery. Even great sages, they're not able to understand how it is that the Lord takes birth. How can the unborn be born? Many speculations come. People think that if you're born, you must be material. Therefore, Krishna, Rama, they have taken birth. They must be material. But why the great sages? They know that he's Bhagavan. He has all the opulences, yet he's born. So they're not speculating, they're asking, what is the significance? What is the real meaning of this? This is the correct procedure. If we want to know something about spiritual life, we should ask. We should learn from the Shastra, from the Guru, and from the great Mahajanas and saintly people. Then we can understand what is the actual significance of these occurrences. Actually, Krishna, he never takes a material body. Even if he did, he wouldn't be affected by that, because he's the controller of all his energies. But in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sambhavami Atma Mayaya, that I come out of my own energy. The avatar means he descends from the spiritual world. So actually the Lord is descending with a Satchit Ananda Vigraha, with a form of eternal blissful knowledge. But he can make that form do anything he wants. On the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Bhishma was shooting arrows at him, and the arrows were striking his body, blood was coming. So it looked like Krishna was a man, that he was being injured. The Kunti Devi, later in Bhagavatam, she said, Krishna is a great actor, the greatest actor. He can play the whatever part he wants. So in the battlefield, he is playing the part. Later, Krishna pulls out the arrows, and he's immediately, no mark or anything is on his transcendental body, no scars, no injuries. Nowadays, the modern movie makers, right, they can do these things. I saw an exhibition on how to do exhibition, and they show how when someone is running from the bullets and you see someone shooting, and you see from the ground all the bullets are coming, and he's just running and somehow missing. So you think, oh, very dangerous. In the ground they're putting gas, pressurized gas. So according to the program of computer, as he's running, this gas is coming up from the ground. So it looks as if a bullet has hit there. But actually in the ground, they're just shooting out some compressed gas. And sound is going just at that time. So then you see that, oh, they're shooting. But actually there's no danger. There's no bullet. Only sound and some spray. So they have so many techniques now. They show you, they'll put the sword right through the person, and you think, oh, it is stabbed. And later, they'll show that the sword, they'll take it out, and the sword is going like this. It's showing, going through. Because first what they'll do is they'll show that the person is being stabbed. They have special sword that is like telescopic. It actually just becomes short. So they'll first stab like this. Then the movie, cut! Right? Then the guy comes out with a sword that is like this, looped, that goes like this. Then the person, they'll have blood, everything. This all ketchup and color dye. Then he'll turn on the side and you'll see that coming out the other side. Then your mind, oh, you know, he's been stabbed. There are so many techniques. Krishna doesn't need all these techniques. He can do by his mystic power. But, and then if he wants, okay, enough acting. And as he is. So for the devotees, these are not wonderful. What, for Krishna can do anything. What, if he wants to appear that he's wounded, he can appear wounded. The next second he can be as it is. The actors can do that. Why Krishna can't do? He can do it without all these paraphernalia. He can do by his own power. So he makes the whole scene appear very real. Sometimes the demons, they think when they're fighting with Vishnu, that, aha, now I've got to him. When Hiranyakashipu was fighting with Narasimha Deva was holding him and he was squirming like a bug. He let him go. He got loose and he said, haha, I'm so strong. He couldn't even hold me. The demons said, and the demigods, the devas, they were watching, oof, oh, Hiranyakashipu got free. But like sometime the cat lets the mouse go. And the mouse runs a little bit and again the cat jumps. Cat is always in control of the situation. He's just enjoying. So like that, since Narasimha Deva is a supreme half lion, cat, and half man, so he is playing like that with the mouse. Then, again, Hiranyakashipu attacks. But that was, Singhadeva got tired with all the play. All right. He was just waiting for the right moment, because Brahma said he shouldn't die a day or night, so he's waiting for the twilight. In the meantime, he has to kill cut the time, right? But it was enough to create some dramatic anxiety in the devas. Since even the devas are not fully sure what powers Vishnu has. Vishnu is beyond their purview. He's living in a higher place. So even the devas, their only information is what they hear from Shastra. And so sometimes they might have some doubt. And Krishna, he dispels all their doubts. Don't worry. But some of the great, some great personalities in the universe, they know the power of Vishnu. There was a time when the Tripurasur, he was fighting with the devas, and he had, by help of Maya, the Asur, the Danava, Maya, the great scientist, demon scientist, he had some special flying saucers and flying machines, which could go in the air and fly here and there and disappear. They go so fast they come out of sight. So he was able to defeat the devas with his flying machine. So the devas went to Lord Shiva, said that these machines were like cities. They're like very big fortress. It was so huge they had so many soldiers and there. Somehow the devas couldn't counteract. They're very well made machines. So they called Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva used his weapon, and he killed all the demons. And they fell, they were all killed on the flying machine. The flying machine came back. At that time, Maya Danava had a special kunda of Amrit. So he just dipped all the asuras in Amrit, and then they all came back to life. Again, the next day they're back to fight. So this disturbed Lord Shiva. I mean, I killed them once and they're again alive. What's going on here? This way I can, you know, every time I kill, every time they come alive, I'm not going to be able to defeat them. It's like a stalemate. So then he went to Lord Vishnu and requested, you please help me. Somehow I'm in a fix. Every time I kill the demons, they come back to life. They got some trick. So Lord Vishnu said, don't worry, I'll help you out. So Lord Vishnu took the form of a cow, and Lord Brahma took a form as a calf. And as a cow and a calf, they walked right into the demons' war camp. And You know, sometimes you see in India the cow is just walking around eating some grass, nobody bothers, right? Like they kind of walk in and they're grazing here and there. So eventually they kind of end up over by the Amrit Kunda, the well of nectar. And then Vishnu as a cow and Brahma, they start drinking the nectar. And they completely drink the well dry. The Maya, he sees the cow is drinking nectar with the calf, and immediately he said, nobody can do this but Vishnu. Using his illusory energy, he has entered into our camp and he's drinking all the nectar. Then he made a declaration which is very interesting. He said that, all right, everything is finished. Once Vishnu decides who's going to win, once he enters into the fray, then doesn't matter Deva or Asura or Nara or human being, the demons, the demigods or the human being, doesn't matter, whatever anyone thinks or does, nothing can change anything. Because whatever Vishnu decides, that's the final. In other words, up to the point when Vishnu was just being neutral, the devas and asuras were fighting. The asuras were winning. But once Lord Shiva went to Vishnu and said, you please intervene. And Vishnu cannot refuse Lord Shiva. Vaishnavanam jata sambhu is the greatest of all the devotees, greatest of all the devas in the material world. So, he entered into the, he decided, alright, I'll help Lord Shiva. That man, soon as Mayadana knew that this is Vishnu, he's entered into the, now he's on the side of the devas. He decided to help out the deva. That means that no matter what we do, we're finished. Now there's no hope. He was very intelligent. He knew that the supreme powerful is Vishnu. Of course, even then he was still a demon. He knew Vishnu doesn't take sides unless he's especially requested. So if, as long as he doesn't take sides, then he can get away with whatever he wants. But he knows that he had that much intelligence that if Vishnu takes sides, being the supreme, then there's no more hope. So, but this transcendental personality of Godhead, it's very difficult for people to understand how he's appearing in the material world. So Suta Goswami knew this secret, this mystery, this tattva. That's the great thing about the Vedic culture, about the Bhagavatam, is that many mysteries are revealed about Bhagavan. Sometimes we discuss with the leaders of other religions, and when you ask them a question, then they tell you that's a mystery. You ask another question, and that's a mystery. So everything is a mystery. A mystery means that it's something that we don't know, and it's a mystery, it's very mysterious, so cannot be understood. But we find here in the Vedic literatures that the great sages, they wanted to find out what were the mysteries. This is very natural. They want to know, they want to solve the mysteries. Mysteries are to be solved. That to be understood. It's only a mystery because we don't know what it is. Just like for a small child, we heard that, for instance, you go in ancient history, you find when the British and the Europeans came to see the Chinese emperor, they'd bring with them one of those mechanical clocks. The ones with the music boxes with the little birds coming in and out and everything. For them it was a mystery. How this is working? You know, cuckoo, 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 coming in. They said, okay, for that you can have Hong Kong, should take it. 99 years, no problem. Cuckoo, cuckoo, you know. They get a little toy and they think, you know, okay, take, you want a trade permit? Okay, bring me another or this machine I like very much. It's mysterious how it's working. But it's not. Nowadays you can buy, in Tirupati you're going and they're selling all these things on the footpath, right? 8 rupees, 20 rupees, you can get cars running. And if you had one of those machines before, 200, 300 years ago, you could become a governor of China by giving one such machine. Now you, for 15 rupees, you can buy it. No more mystery. Who knows how to make flying saucer, you can become very, then everyone will want to buy one for their military. But Maya Dhanava, he knows the mystery. So there are many things like that. If we don't know it, it's a mystery. If we know it, it's no longer a mystery. That's what is called confidential knowledge. Krishna reveals in the Bhagavatam secrets about himself through the Guru Parampara, which normally people don't know. They don't know how God comes in this world. Many people don't know that God comes in the world. Many people don't know how the Lord has form, yet He is formless. How He has form, yet He has no material quality. He is nirguna. Yet He has form. Satchidananda vigraha. Form is there. But Upanishads also say He is nirguna. Although He is nirguna, He has no material quality, but yet He can accept everything with His hand and He can run faster than anyone else. So what does it mean? It's a mystery. So people read the Upanishads, many of them, they come into mystery. So that's why in the Vedas, it describes in many places, there's many pramana, that beyond the four Vedas, we know the four Vedas, Rig, Yajur, Atharva, Sama, Veda. Beyond that, there's a Pancham Veda, fifth Veda. The Pancham Veda is the Puranas. Jiva Goswami has established this very clearly, the Puranas are the fifth Veda in his Tattva Sandarbha. And there, he also has given many Pramanas. After establishing by Vedic Praman, the Vedas themselves are saying that this is the fifth Veda. The Puranas also say we are the fifth Veda. Then after establishing that, then there's other Praman that where Krishna says in the Puranas, and in the Vedas, that the Puranas are more important than the four Vedas. Because the Puranas are all analogies and stories and histories. So it brings everything to life by practical example. Just a tattva, just a philosophy, sometimes people may not grasp it, but you give a practical example, then you can understand, oh, it's like this. So the Puranas are all practical examples. Therefore, Krishna, and He's more pleased when you explain things with many stories and practical examples, because people can understand easily. So actually the Puranas are more important than the four Vedas and Upanishads, because they're explaining everything very clearly with many examples. And of all the Puranas, the Bhagavad Puran is called Amala Puran. Pure Puran, free of any material contamination. There's no mixture of material and spiritual. It's giving purely the science about the personality of Godhead. So this is what the sages wanted to hear. They'd already heard so many things. Now they want the secret. The Supreme Bhagavan, He's coming, He's born through Devaki and Vasudeva. How is that? How can the unborn be born? We want to know this mystery. In effect, that's what they're asking. And Sutara Goswami, He knows, for the devotees, this is not a big mystery, that the Lord can be born, and He can take a child form and different forms. This is His leela. So He is going to explain in great detail how this is possible. Now in the previous verse, it's very interesting, because in the previous verse it also explains, the sages said, Bhurini, Bhuri Karmani, Srotabhyani vibhagasaha atasadotra yatsaram samudhritya manishaya bruhi bhadraya bhutanam yenatma supersedati. Translation. There are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them there are many prescribed duties which can be learned only after many years of study and their various divisions. Therefore, O sage, please select the essence of all these scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings, that by such instruction their hearts may be fully satisfied. In other words, the sages, they sat down for 1,000-year yajna. But even then, they didn't feel confident that if we sit here, we should listen to all of the four Vedas, 108 Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Mahabharata, and all the other literatures. Because there are so many varieties of scripture, and each has got a particular line and a particular prescribed duty to learn. So many, many years to study all this. And then how to know which is, then only we could come to understand which is the best, which is the most applicable. We maybe not live that long, maybe we'll never understand. So here's someone who knows. He has an overview of the whole Vedic picture. Sutta Goswami is such an authority. So they're saying, please give us the essence, so we can be satisfied, so all living entities can be satisfied. How we can be fully satisfied in this lifetime? That is the real purpose of religion. That is the purpose of dharma. We should get totally satisfied. If after doing all the dharmas we're still not satisfied, and we're still hankering for things, then what is the use? Say, Srama eva hi kevalam. Then we're giving so much energy, but we're not getting the fruit. The fruit is only the effort. So it's not enough that we are born in a Hindu family, or that we even accept a guru or initiation, or born in a family of a devotee. We had to actually understand this science. These are great rishis and sages. Sometimes people say, why are you preaching in India? You just preach in the West. Actually, there are thousands of devotees preaching in the West. A few devotees we have to also preach here in India. These are great rishis, and they're asking questions. Vedas say, atat brahma jigyasa. If you say the Vedas are for the Hindus, then it's telling the Hindus you ask questions. If you say the Vedas are for everyone, then everyone, including Hindus, should ask questions. But in any case, asking questions and getting the answer, this is a duty for everyone. So just being born in India doesn't mean that, okay, I'm born in India, I don't need to ask any question. I don't need to learn anything more about my Shastra. Being born is enough. We had to learn. There's a very interesting story about Indians from about 300 years ago, during the Mughal regime. There was a king in Bengal called Krishna Chandra, and he had a famous courtier called Gopal Bhar. I think in India, I think here in Karnataka, there's also some famous, clever advisor to one king, but I heard about that. So if you give me a translation, I'll use his examples too if I find anything suitable. Anyway, they're always interesting because even Indian humor is always filled with culture. It's a Prabhupada love. But I heard about this personality, but no one's given me the book yet. If you're looking for something to give me, really cheap, then I don't know if there's a translation. So, there's such a person in Bengal. His name was Gopal Bhar. So what happened was the emperor at that time was a Mughal. But he had many kings who were Hindus. Emperor means he has many kings and lords under him. So this emperor, his capital was in a place called Goud, about 200 miles north of Navadvip. And the king of Krishna, King Krishna Chandra, Raja Krishna Chandra, he was the king of Nadia district. So Navadvip fell under him, and that was a seat of great learning even 300 years ago. At the time of Lord Chaitanya, that was the center of learning in India, at least in northern India. So one Digvijay pundit, he came and he saw the emperor and said that I am a Digvijay pundit. I am defeating all other pundits. I am the greatest pundit in India. And I am challenging all the pundits in your empire. You send the best pundits here, I will defeat them in front of you. And if I defeat them, they have to accept me as their guru. And if they defeat me, then I'll accept them as their guru. I'll accept any of them as my guru. So I am challenging you and your kingdom to provide a pundit who can defeat me. I, the great Digvijay, pundit! So then the emperor said, well, I'm sure we have a pundit who can defeat someone like you. Anyway, let's see. He called his minister and said, send a message off to Raja Krishna Chandra to inform the pundits in Navadvip. They can send someone here to defeat this Digvijay. So then Raja Krishna Chandra gets the message. He has to provide a pundit. He sends a message over to Navadvip to the top pundits, and someone's got a sick stomach and someone's feeling a little bit out of the weather and someone has to visit his mother-in-law. In other words, all the pundits, they wanted to avoid facing some Digvijay, because then, you know, if they happen to get defeated, then it's a big embarrassment for them. So nobody felt so confident to go there and face off. So the king was in great trouble, because if he doesn't send a pundit, the emperor will say, what kind of king are you? What you're supposed to have all the pundits and you can't send anyone? So his whole position will become very much down politically, just on a little thing like that. So he was in anxiety, putting his head in his hand, and then Gopal Bhar came up, and usually they have jokes together. He was the one who could spoof on the king. So he asked the Raja, you know, my lord, how are your majesty, how's everything going? I said, don't joke around now, I have no time for you, you know. I have a serious problem. And I'm not coming to joke. I'm your advisor. You tell me what's your problem. Ari, don't joke around. I have no time for jokes. I don't want to joke. Just tell me what the problem is. Maybe I have the solution. Don't underestimate me. So he told, okay, this is the problem I'm facing, and then what to do. And then Gopal Bhar said, no problem. I'll go there. So you go there. You're not a pundit. How are you going to defeat? He said, don't worry. If I go there, you'll give me some reward if I'm successful. Yeah, sure, I'll give you 1,000 gold coins if you can defeat the Digvijay. No problem, I'll do it. He went back to his house and shaved all his hair off, kept a big sika. Then he got the wooden karams and took off his normal dress and got a good silk dhoti and chadar. Good Harinam chadar with Hare Krishna, everything's all over stamped. Got a very big Brahmin thread on and put on a big tilak. And all kinds of marks of Vishnu and everything. And he had one broken bed. So he took the leg off the broken bed and he wrapped it up in a cloth, silken cloth. You know this story. Then he went and the king saw, you know, it's like pakka pandit. Sika, tilak, everything. The Harinam chadar. He says, psh, well, Gopal, you look very impressed. And Gopal is quite healthy, so he said, I'm off now to see the emperor. I'll defeat this Digvijay, don't worry. So I didn't know you were such a Vedavit. Don't worry, I've got with me my Khatvanga Puran. Khatvanga Puran, yes, don't worry. With this Shastra, I'll defeat him. Then he went off to walk to the emperor, and he came in. He came in very, you know, very proud with his Shastra under his arm. He came, he looked at the Digvijay. He pranamed to the emperor and said, but I'm tired after a journey, so I can rest for a couple of days and I'll meet this Digvijay. That's no problem. Even the Digvijay got a little bit, you know. He's not afraid at all, you know. It's like psychologically he was unsure of himself. And so then Gopal Bhar, for a few days he feasted, had some good meals and whatever he wanted, he ordered. The king said, whatever he wants, you give him. So he was having a lot of dvaibaras and everything, whatever. But the emperor, Digvijaya, said, where's your pandit, you know, how long is he going to rest? You know? So he sent a message and said, okay, today I am coming. Again, Gopal came, strutting, very big with his shastra. And so the Digvijaya, he said, Acha, well, I see you are carrying some book. What shastra you are carrying? He said, oh, this is the Khadvanga Puran. The pandit is saying, Khadvanga Puran. I said, I know the Skanda Puran, Bhagavat Puran, the Vishnu Puran, in all the 18 Puran, but Khadvanga Puran. Could I see that? But then, the Gopal said, Hare! He held it, Khadvanga Puran is speaking! Emperor! Khadvanga Puran is never wrong! The Khadvanga Puran is speaking! I am hearing it speak! Yes! Now, at this Lagna, and this Muhurtam, at this Rasi, and this Yogam, at this moment, for the next Muhurta, this Digvijaya Pandit, he has got some special siddhi. Anyone who gets one hair from his head will be free from all kinds of suffering, will get great world fame. But they now only now for 48 minutes you have the one Muhurta now. Then all the people start running and grabbing his hair. And he goes, ah! And they're all pulling, and so he ran out. And everyone's running after pulling his hair. So he ran right out from the palace and he escaped from that empire. See, Khadvanga Puran is never wrong. Well, the emperor was very happy, gave him 1,000 gold coins. He got 2,000, went back and got another 1,000 from the king. So when he got back to his the king said, how could you do that? What is this Khadvanga Puran? Then he unwrapped a cloth and he showed a broken bed, leg. You see, I have my cot. Cot means bed. And this is the anga. This is the anga of the bed. This is one leg, it's one anga. And this is also a very old one. So it's a Puran. Khadvanga Puran. I didn't tell a lie. So how could you do that? How could you go there? I mean, you had so much guts just to go there and do this. You weren't afraid. I mean, what if, anything could have happened? No. If some Digvijaya Pandit comes and challenges, and he wants a Mughal emperor to be the judge, what does a Mughal emperor know about Veda Shastra? See, someone so foolish that he comes and he wants his panditva, his scholarship to be judged by someone who knows nothing about the subject. I mean, he's meant to be cheated in this way. You're a fool, number one. That if you want to get judged, you have to have people who are capable of understanding the subject matter. So I knew that anyone who did that, he's very proud and he's very foolish. And so in this way, I can easily defeat him. So this is the thing, is that although many people are born in India, just like that Mughal emperor or even, some Pandit Digvijaya, but they don't have some time, they don't know all the shastric inner meanings. And that's why even these great sages, they're asking Sutta Goswami, we want to hear from you the essence of the shastra. Because you can know so many things sometimes, you still don't know what is the essence. You can go to the whole university, but what is the essence, Might not pick it. Actually, university, what essence is there? Vedas, at least you can get essence. What is the purpose of life? Who is Bhagavan? How Bhagavan is coming in this world? And yet he remains Bhagavan. He's not diminished. Or is he diminished? All these doubts and questions and mysteries, they want cleared up. So being in this opportunity, you're all the very most fortunate people in the world because you're born in this great culture. There's no culture greater than Indian culture. This philosophy, this knowledge. But everyone born here should take advantage of it and fully understand what all the mysteries should be answered. There should be no excuse, or it's a mystery. Because there's a beauty of the Vedas, especially all the mysteries have been answered in Bhagavad and in Gita. No significant mysteries have even been left. A few details, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also clears those up and his followers. But the principal philosophical points are all answered. That is the wonderful thing. That's why people all over the world, they're flocking to the Krishna conscious movement and to the Bhagavad Dharma because they're getting all their questions answered. And that is a wonderful thing. Everyone should know this science. Especially anyone who is part of Sanatana Dharma, they should know it thoroughly. And once you know it, the Lord Chaitanya said that everyone born in India, they should perfect their life. Bharat bhumite manushya janma hoy lo jar janma shartaka koro poru pukar. Perfect your life and then help others. Why do we want, if I get saved, then I should save someone else also. Right? If I get pulled out of the water, I'm drowning, and then our other friends are there drowning, I should throw them a rope and pull them out too. And this way, everyone can be saved. So we should take advantage. Don't be like this emperor and these people. They don't know anything of their own. They're born in India, but they don't know the culture. They don't know what is the great gift of the Vedas. And even the Vedas are so vast. What is the essence of the Vedas? That we should know. So Bhagavad is described as the ripe fruit of the Vedic tree. If you have a mango tree, what's the most important thing of the mango tree? The leaves, the branch, the root, the wood. What's the most important thing? The fruit. The fruit of the tree is the most important. That's why we know the tree because of its fruit. Why do you say jackfruit tree, mango tree, lime tree, orange tree? Because the fruit of mango, jackfruit, lime, orange, and so on. So they say the ripened fruit of the holy Vedas is the Bhagavad Puran. So that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, if you can't read anything else but read Gita and read Bhagavad. These two books are the essence of everything. In fact, if you read these, you don't need to read others also. Others are all good. But these are the essence. This contain all the essential knowledge. Other knowledge is additional. You can take it or leave it. It's not that you had to have it, information. But it's there. So we respect it and we use it. It adds more weight and explanation sometimes. Therefore you'll find in the purport many shastras are quoted. We respect all these shastras. But the Vedas are very vast, and if we just know Gita and Bhagavad, it's enough to get the real understanding. So I thank all of you for your interest coming here on Sunday morning and having these special classes and actively participating in all the temple programs throughout the year. We want to see that here in Bangalore there should be thousands of home programs and lakhs of people chanting Hare Krishna. For Prabhupada's centennial, should be 100,000 people chanting japa. So that can happen because all of you then had to become preachers. You all had to become conversant with these truths and then convince other people to take up this most important program of bhakti yoga. Essential for everyone to do bhakti yoga. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. Any question? Not really contradictory. If one is actually being gradually awakened, then it's not a sramayivi kevalam. Sometimes people might be sticking to a process which is not really dharma. the name of dharma, or it may be dharma, but it might be a sub-religious principle. Just like being honest is a sub-religious principle. It's a part. It's not a dharma in itself. Not if you're just honest, that's a religion. But it's a quality of religion to be honest. But religion means your relationship with God. Dharma means your development of your relationship with Krishna. If you have just a series of sub-religious principles and no understanding and no consciousness and no relationship and knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then by doing all those things, you are still going to simply be in the karmas. You're not actually progressing out of the material world. You had to have some connection with the Absolute Truth, with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the point. Sometimes people just stick to some idea, which might appear to, you know, have some relation with dharma. It might be, but it might only be a sub-religious principle, or it may be that one has already graduated. Just like someone that just goes in first grade, but they never graduate. Every year they go back in first grade. They never go to second grade. They just stick to the same thing. It's not some principles that are there to purify us. We go to the next grade. But some people, they just hold on, first grade, to the end. I'll never leave first grade. I love my first grade. Until I'm 100 years old, I'll be in the first grade primary school. Does it make sense? What is the use of going again and again and again to first grade? You go to first grade, finish it, you learn your AAEU, or you learn your ABCs, or they go on to the second grade. So some religious principles are there to train us and bring us up to the next level. But if the person never goes on to the next level, then after a time you can say he's wasting his time. Or he's just putting in effort, but he's not going ahead. It's like someone's running the wheels, but still the brake is on. The car's not moving. You take off the brake, go ahead. You can say, okay, there's some benefit. He's not going back. At least he's staying in the same place. What does it say? It doesn't say he's falling. It said that you're putting energy, but you're not getting the fruit. You're not getting the fruit from that because you are not going ahead. So what is our progress? How we can measure our progress? How much we're developing our consciousness of God? How much we're developing our consciousness of Bhagavan? Our attraction to hear about Bhagavan is a personal test. Since, as you say, everything is meant to bring us to that end, and every practice we're doing is to gradually purify us and make us more attracted to serving and hearing about the glories of Krishna. So we can judge in our own personal consciousness, am I more attracted to serving Krishna than I am making progress? Am I more attracted to simply the sports, and more attracted to the cinemas, and more attracted to this and that, then we know I'm still very neophyte. I had to get more association and build up my attraction to Krishna. So it's not really a contradiction. We have to see it from the right perspective. If you do even a beginning activity, you get a little more inspiration, you go to the next activity, next, so you're making progress. It's just when someone gets stuck up and they're not increasing in their, then they should know something is wrong. Somehow I'm like, you get in the mud and your wheels spin in the car and you don't go forward. For some reason they got stuck up. So the energy is being spent, but they're not making the progress from that point. So it's actually a very progressive statement that we should analyze our own progress and see that we are making progress. That could apply to people at different levels. Someone may be in a very neophyte or maybe even a little more advanced. We can get stuck up at any level. So we want to keep on progressing. And if we are not progressing, at some point we just get stuck at the same level, then we should be consulting with Guru and Shastra. And we should be seeing what is our problem. Even Vyasadeva asked his Guru Narada Muni, why I'm not feeling satisfied? Because if we are progressing spiritually, we should be satisfied. We should feel some inner satisfaction. So Vyasadeva wasn't feeling satisfied, and that is going to be described later on in the later chapters. That was also inspiration for Vyasadeva to write the Bhagavat Shastra, Bhagavat Puran. Because after writing all the Vedas, he wasn't feeling happy in his heart. Until he wrote Bhagavat, then he felt peace of mind. Of course, Lord Chaitanya recommended we should all worship Krishna. But if somebody is very much attached to another form of Vishnu other than Krishna, like Ram or Narasimha or some other form, then in some cases he would make exception when he saw that they are really sincerely attached to that form. But otherwise, if one does not have that kind of very strong fixation on a particular form, and they're open to more or less any form of Vishnu, then worship Krishna because that's the original form. But when we worship Krishna from this conditional state, we cannot imitate being one of his Brajavasi cowherd friends or anything. We cannot just immediately come and want to, you know, put our arm around the deity and go out with the cows. Because that would be all artificial. So initially we approach the Lord, although we worship Krishna, but we approach him in awe and reverence. We approach him in a mood of service, as a servitor, in the mood of dasya. But we hear about the Krishna's pastimes, and we hear about his majestic aspects, his avatars, all the cantos of the Bhagavad tell about different incarnations. We hear about all the incarnations that have been scheduled. And we also hear about Krishna's own intimate pastimes, own revealed pastimes. And this way, then gradually we get attracted to the pastimes of Krishna, but we know that what Krishna is doing is not some mundane activity, because Krishna's pastimes are very much human-like. So if we don't know Krishna's position as the Supreme Vishnu, Ananta Devo, Ananta Vishnu, if we don't know that he's the Supreme Vishnu, then sometime we could get confused just if we hear about Krishna's pastime and think that, well, what he's doing is, like a human being. You won't understand the inner significance of it. So therefore, at first it's recommended that we know all about Vishnu Tattva, the basic essential factors, and then when we understand how Krishna is the Supreme Vishnu, we can understand that although he's doing these activities, he's stealing butter from the monkey. It's not that he's a thief. He's a proprietor of anything, what he can steal. But somehow monkeys have come, and they're great rishis and sages who have come in the form of monkeys, and he's playing and giving them the nectar of food from his own hand. But from his mother's point of view, oh, he's my little child and he's stealing the butter, and what butter will be left for me to feed him? She also is simply concerned out of love. So she's chasing after Krishna, do you stop stealing the butter? And Krishna is running away and playing all these things. So you see, for very grave people, pundits, sometimes they can't figure out how God is running around stealing butter. But for the devotees, once they understand Krishna's position, naturally even they feel attracted by all these activities, because it shows how the Lord can also come down to a very personal, loving relationship with his devotees. He leaves off his majestic side, and he just becomes intimately connected with all his devotees and loving relationships. And that has got a very beautiful, attractive features, more beautiful than the features of Narayan. But if we make the mistake and think that Krishna is an ordinary human, you see, then we'll be a big aparadhi, an offender, and we'll fall down from our position. So not get that confusion and not misunderstand Krishna's position. Therefore, we are to worship in awe and reverence until formally while we're in this planet. And that way, we're worshiping in a sense, like we would worship Lakshmi and Narayan, although we are worshipping the form of Krishna and Balaram. But then we also remember Krishna and Balaram's pastime. We do Govardhan Puja, we do Janmashtami, we do many Julan, Yatra, and so many different pastimes. So in this way, gradually the devotees get attracted to this loving form of the Lord. So this is the prescribed procedure. When one gets very advanced and in their devotional service, they naturally become attracted to serving Krishna in a particular mood, and that time they serve Krishna in the following some resident of Vrindavan. That's called Raganuga, but we don't artificially imitate that. We first start off at in sadhana bhakti, and then gradually these things develop by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Five rasas, of course, four of them are active and one is passive. The Guru, we worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the Guru. We cannot directly approach Krishna, we have to go through the Guru. And since we are to worship the Lord first in the mood of Dasya, then as we develop, some people remain in Dasya. That's not like a material thing that one is better than the other in some mundane sense. The different devotees have got different relationship with the Lord. Someone's relationship may be Dasya, may be Sakya, may be Vatsalya, may be in servitude, friendship, parental, or conjugal. And we have to do our devotional service in this material world in any case in the mood of Dasya until such time as we are awakened to any other rasa, if we happen to have another rasa. So the Guru is the one who controls and guides and acts as the transparent via media for getting all this understanding. And he introduces us in the spiritual world to Krishna and to the associate that we are to assist. Hare Krishna. Thank you.